This look familiar?
No drinking.
Great. My name is Eric. I'm an alcoholic. Thanks, Sam. There you are, right in front of me. Thanks for asking me to come up here. My sobriety day is January 20th of 2000. I have a home group. It's the Outlaw Safecracker Group down in Richmond. And I have a sponsor, and he is a little farther north, not too far out of reach, thank God. And anyway, but it's good to be here. Clay, it's awesome to see you here. You look fabulous. In fact, if I fall down, that's your speaker right there. That's the guy. We're giving Clay a hard time. Well, I'll get to that in a minute, but anyway, I was going to start now. But anyway, it's good to come up here. We had a good time driving up here. These two guys came with me, and that's something that all my sponsors have always said. You know, you go with other people, take people with you. Try not to do it alone. You know, we don't do it alone, you know, especially if you go somewhere to talk, you know, and it keeps you from being a nutcase when you get here. So, but we had a good time coming up here, and we just kept calling each other hot dog the whole time. It's kind of a long story. We picked up some guys from a treatment center the other night, and I mistakenly overheard one of them saying the word hot dog. I thought he was calling the other guy hot dog, and so it became his nickname. And so anyway, we all kind of laughed about that the whole time. And that's great about car rides with people, though. You always get these funny little nicknames and fellowship things are going on, and I love that kind of stuff, man. It's good. You know, none of that stuff seemed like it'd be hanging out with people, and I don't know, just nothing seemed like it would be fun anymore when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, everything seemed like it was going to be a pretty dark time. You know, I couldn't imagine sobriety. I couldn't imagine having any kind of fun or any kind of, I was so afraid that I would not ever stop thinking about drinking, you know. So that has all come to a halt. Man, I haven't had the desire to drink in a long time. Man, I've been sober that long, but I have not had a desire to drink in a while. Man, probably most of the 12 years I've been sober, and that is unbelievable. And it's proof to me that there is a power that's out there. I was talking to James this weekend about that. We were talking an awful lot about God and this power. Is it God? Is it this? Is it whatever? You know, and how we find that. And is God in control or is he not? And anyway, we'll talk a little bit more. I'll talk about my experience with that kind of stuff. So if I'm giving Clay a hard time, I'll tell a funny story real quick. We were all in the kitchen at the home group of the night. Our treasurer's got both the baskets full of money. We're all kind of standing around. My brother, Lincoln, is hilarious. Were you there, too, Max? It was good. Lincoln kind of speaks up. He's like, Clay, I know you're spotting that money in the basket. And so, anyway, it's kind of, I guess you kind of had to be there, but anyway, I'm not going to pick on you anymore, man. It's all in good fun. We have a lot of fun. It's good to be in a home group, and it's good to have commitments there and friends there and, you know, things like that to keep me tied into Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I've talked to a lot of people recently just about, I don't know, man, people coming and going and that kind of thing. And most of the sponsorship that I've had since I've gotten here, they've always been about having commitment, you know, and making sure that I'm where I'm saying I'm supposed to be and doing the things I'm supposed to be doing, and you know, kind of disregarding whether it's something that I want to do or convenience or things like that. And but I understand more about that, you know, today. And you know, when I was drinking, I had no sense of anything else other than drinking. You know, no sense of you. It was just all about drinking and me and what I wanted, you know, and that all that stuff is changed dramatically. I mean, it's, you know, I think it will continue to change if I stay here, but it certainly isn't like it used to be. You know, I was only concerned with I looked up, I was writing some inventory today, and I started looking up some words. I mean, you always hear selfishness. I'm like, well, I don't even know if I've ever even looked up the word, and I don't even know if I've ever looked up before, you know, self-seeking and things like that, but you know, these words were important, and I know why they're in here, you know, and I looked up self-will, too. That was interesting. Apparently, that's when I am constantly using my will when I'm in conflict with something. So that explains an awful lot, the word conflict being the operative one there. But when I was drinking, I was always in one of those self things, you know. I was always just concerned about how is it going to affect me, what am I going to get from you, you know. And so that stuff is come to hopefully, you know, improved. I'm sure that I know that it has in a lot of areas of my life. But I was, you know, by the time I got to AA, I was, I guess, 99, right around 99, 2000. And I had been drinking for about 16 years. And by for the last decade of that, I was a daily blackout, bed wet and drunk. And that's just how I spent my life, you know, for the 90s. I don't remember what really happened in the 90s so much, but it was just a repetitive kind of a thing. And you know, when I started drinking when I was a teenager, I didn't really think it was that big of a deal. And as it moved on, I don't know, somewhere along the line, I just lost the ability to make any decision about whether or not I take the drink. I can't even tell you when that happened. I mean, but it's funny, I was thinking about the day. It's like, yeah, well, when I was in high school, I was drinking alone. I was drinking in the morning. I was doing all the things I was doing that I was doing in the 90s, you know. So it was already pretty much a circus from the get-go. And well, by the time I got to AA, I was just afraid. I was about 125 pounds. I wasn't much on eating. I was all about drinking. And, you know, I didn't know what else to do. I was pretty much cornered at that point. I'd spent about 6 months prior to my first AA meeting just trying to smoke as much grass as I could get my hands on and drink as much sharps as I could, you know, accumulate and tried to maintain some type of what I thought to be sobriety that way. And that was just crazy. I can't even tell you how nuts that got, you know. It's just like you're just kind of beating the tiger cage with a stake, you know. I mean, it was just like, it was awful. And so, I don't know, man. I guess I felt like I couldn't get away with drinking anymore. You know, it was a place where alcohol didn't work anymore. It was not getting me to the spot, you know, that I get to when I drink. Whenever I drink, whether it's good or bad, and different, I always get to a place where, you know, I'm okay. It always works for me, unlike anything else I've ever experienced. It's a very unrealistic experience. It's not something that happens to people that aren't alcoholic, not from what I gather. I have a lot of non-alcoholic friends at work and, you know, neighbors and stuff, and I've been around these people when they drink, and I watch them, you know, not because of envy, you know, you just naturally watch that kind of thing, and they don't have the same kind of reaction to drinking that I do, you know. I get just unbelievably excited just walking to 7-Eleven knowing I'm going to get a 12-pack. I mean, I'm over the moon with just joy. Just that whole walk is almost better than drinking it. Just the anticipation of knowing that it's going to get fixed in my head is good. And that's just kind of weird, you know. People I know that are normal don't get like that, you know. And so, I don't know, man. I spent some time out in L.A. after high school trying to, I don't know, be famous or whatever you do out there. And it didn't work out too good. Came back to Virginia. And from that point on in my drinking, that's when it really was just daily. There were some brief periods up until that point of something would happen. Somebody be upset. I'd stop, regroup, you know, get a new plan together, determine non-alcoholic and go back to it, you know. But when I got back to Virginia when I was about 20 or so, it just, you know, it was pretty much on from that point. And I tried going to college, you know, I felt like that was the right thing to do. And I just drank myself up out of VCU and just ran up a huge bar tab with the U.S. government, you know, for student loans. That's really all it was. And, you know, a day at a time, little by little, I just drank myself out of, you know, relationships, residences, opportunity, you know, drank myself out of good and bad. You know, I wasn't able to go through anything that was difficult and have any kind of a learning experience or any kind of growth emotionally or anything like that. I just was always just, you know, kind of in a knocked out, drunken state. I was insanely drunk whenever possible. And I just feel like I stayed where I was, you know. And that's just, I think guys I've sponsored, people I know, friends in AA, I think most of them would probably agree we just kind of just get stuck emotionally wherever we are, you know. And so I wasn't capable of having any relationships with people, although I was trying to have as many, you know, relations as I could with whoever. And I was, you know, just inconsiderate, you know, jerk with all the women I was involved with at that point. And I was an inconsiderate jerk with all my male friends as well. And I just, you know, I was a wrecking ball. People were not interested in having me around in the end. And my solution for difficulty with those around me was always just to kind of, you know, cut and run. So I was just looking for people that were just like me. I guess you hear that said, but I just was looking for people that weren't going to give me grief about getting drunk. Because, I mean, I was the guy, I was not the guy that was going around, you know, surrendering. You know, I'm an alcoholic. That's why I can't stand up. I mean, it wasn't me. I was always more of the defensive kind of not, if you want to talk to me about drinking, I'd just rather quit my job and go somewhere else. I'm not going to discuss it with you. It's none of your business. Stop bothering me. It's your problem. And that was my stance on that. And, you know, it was just always tough when somebody wanted to have that talk with you. You know, I just hated that. It just bothered me, you know. I had no concept of or ability to see how it might affect others, you know, and the type of concern that you have or people have for family members or friends or whatever, you know, it just didn't exist in me. I just saw you as a threat, you know. And so that's the selfishness, I guess, of drinking and the behavior that goes along with it. So, you know, I'm just running around. I'm hopping from one job to the next, one apartment to the next, and I'm just kind of getting worn down. And I just repeated over and over and over. And a few times early on, I was able to stop for like a couple of days or something. I mean, one time I stopped for most of a month because I was intervened on. But in my mind, I knew that I could drink again. You know, I mean, I knew that after my friends kind of pulled the dogs off, I could go back to drinking after this little 30-day sabbatical. Everybody's convinced this would fix me. You know, and I had high hopes of being a normal drinker. I was like, yeah. Maybe a break will do me good, you know. But, you know, every time I stopped and started again, it's just like they say. I mean, in this short time after that, I was in just as bad a shape, if not worse. You know, I always seemed to pick up again right off where I had left off. You know, it was just never enough, ever. I never liked the idea of having a drink, people to go out to have a beer, that phrase. I mean, people used to say that to me. They'd be like, we're going to go out tonight and we're all going to have a beer. And they kind of like yell that at me. You know, they emphasize the word a. It's all like I could hear it or something, you know. I'd just be like, really? I mean, come on. You know, that always just sounded like a boring time to me. I just didn't understand that. It doesn't work for me. It doesn't flick that switch, man. It does not do the trick. So, I don't know. I was drinking and drinking and drinking and drinking, and I was just kind of a day at a time, man, just really willing to just accept the life that it came along with the drinking. I was not struggling to stop all the time, you know, save for a few times where the pressure was on, one I already talked about, and another where I stopped for like 5 days or something because I was really embarrassed about my behavior somewhere. That was when I was like 22, 23, had a little bit of self-will left in that deal, and, but, you know, every time after that, something just says to me, some kind of way my mind just shifts and I find myself drinking again. Whether I think it's okay or I can get away with it, I don't know, whatever. I don't even know what the argument is. I just know that something happens and it's okay for Eric to drink and I'm drinking. You know, and it's just insane because anybody around me and everybody around me could outline, you know, on a whiteboard or a bulletin board all the things that happen to Eric when he drinks and the stuff that's been happening, and it makes sense. But I just, you know, I can't hear it. It's like I have a way of just tuning them out, you know. And I honestly don't even know what completely got my attention, you know, because it was really I was just pretty much surrendered to living my life that way. And it wasn't like there was some big event, some life-changing accident or anything like that at all. I think that the thought that I had when I suddenly had a desire to stop drinking was that everybody knew now. You know, I was at a wedding, and it's always a scene when you're at a wedding. It is for me because it's an open bar, and it's just like I can't handle the pressure of the open bar. I love the open bar, you know, but there's a lot of pressure involved with that, so... Anyway, I knew I wasn't supposed to drink that day, you know, at least while I was getting ready. You know, it was a road trip, it was an hour drive to Alexandria, whatever. I just could not take a drink that day. And I was already half in the bag when I woke up that morning, and I got up and I started at it again. By the time we got through this painfully long Catholic wedding ceremony in the middle of July, you know, with limited air conditioning, you know, I just was looking like I was a wreck sitting in that church pew. People were just kind of moving away from me. I just smelled like God only knows what, you know. And I just remember going to that open bar and drinking shots of scotch with people, you know, which is, you know, no lunch, no breakfast for years on end at that point, I'm sure. And so, and all kinds of weird things happened that I don't remember, you know, or wasn't really willing to acknowledge. And I just remember getting up and feeling really ashamed. And then, the, you know, the story started kind of funneling back to me. And it just was weighing on me more so. I mean, any other time, crap like that has been happening to me since I drank, since I first started drinking. And in high school, it was just kind of silly. Everybody's just like, oh, look at him, you know. He just beer bonged a six-pack, and he just fell down and cut his eye open. Isn't that funny? You know? And then you go make out some girl. So, I mean, I don't know. It's just kind of, you know, it was always just like everything was fine. You know, but when you're like 29, you know, and you continuously opened up a wound on your eye all the time, and, you know, you scarred up all the time, and, you know, you just, nobody wants you to stay over at their house because they know what happens to the bed when you sleep over. You know, it just gets a little weird, and it gets uncomfortable for everybody. And all of this just seemed to kind of hit me at once, you know. And, I mean, it wasn't anything different than the other night, you know, from what happened, but something happened, man. And then my mom came and intervened on me in my apartment, and, you know, we kind of struggled for about an hour back and forth. And by the time she left, I think that I, for some reason, I just was willing to consider not drinking anymore. I don't know what else to put it. And the next day I woke up, I didn't drink. And for the next 5 days, I didn't drink. I saw a lot of things. I was scratching and shaking and flipping out. And it was, you know, kind of miserable. You know, and then for the next few months, I continued doing a lot of other stuff I was doing and started drinking again with sharps and all that crap and kind of picked up where I left off. So it was, but that stuff just started wearing me out. I don't know what it was. It's like I could not seem to get to the spot again. You know, it wasn't enough. You know, and I met some girl, and she didn't want me to smoke. She wasn't going to date me if I smoked grass. I could never feel the only girl I ever knew that was like this. So anyway, so I stopped. I really hadn't seen a woman in a long time. I was very interested in being with this girl, and so I stopped doing that. No problem. You know, I'm good. Can we be together? You know. So, you know, that was what it was. That whole thing ended and fell apart. So I'm just, you know, just Eric and his sharps. And I just started getting nervous. You know, I felt like I'd start drinking again. And this fear and this loneliness started kind of coming over me. You know, I was working in this bar. You know, there wasn't any me. It was always just me going to work, leaving, coming home, doing whatever. And I just was, been doing that for months. And I just, I don't know what it was, but it suddenly seemed like a good idea to go to an AA meeting, you know. My mom had brought all the AA literature when she came try to sober me up, you know, 6 months prior, dropped it all off my apartment. So I called Alcoholics Anonymous in Richmond, and I went to my first meeting, you know, the day after Christmas in 99, you know, and I went there, and I, you know, that was really the start of the whole thing for me, because I just had never been I had been so long since I'd been around a group of people and felt like I was in the right place, you know, because all those years prior to that, even when the drinking was, you know, maybe not so bad, whatever, but something was always just kind of off. I just never was in the right spot. I was never doing the right thing ever. And then you're getting drunk and falling, you know, all that kind of, and not doing the right thing then. And man, it was just kind of an overwhelming feeling that I was in the right spot. And I, for the first time, I admitted I was an alcoholic. I raised my hand. I'm like, yeah, I'm Eric. I'm new. I'm an alcoholic. And I mean, the words just came flying right out of my mouth. You know, I don't think I'd ever said that to anybody, you know. Never admitted that to anybody. Because you start talking about being an alcoholic, people are going to expect some results, you know. And so there's a lot of pressure involved with that, too. So anyway, I started going to these AA meetings. I go to the AA meeting. A guy sold me a big book. I'd come home, I'd crack open a Sharps, I'd start reading through that big book, you know, and I'd start marking down how many Sharps I was drinking on the calendar, because it started freaking me out that I was drinking. Nobody else was drinking Sharps. Some guy told me in the meeting that something about my hand over a hot stove or something. I didn't know what he was talking about, you know, and everybody kept telling me I'd get drunk if I kept drinking that stuff. And you know, little did I know that I was, you know, I was drinking. I had no idea about this allergy problem that I have with alcohol, and you know, that I just can't drink it at all. It'd just be like the same thing if you put like an eye drop of Jack Daniels in a big gallon jug of water. What's the difference, you know? I mean, that's kind of how I had to look at that, you know. And I didn't look at it that way then. I look at it that way now. But the pressure for me then was just like, man, all these other people in this meeting are happy. None of them are drinking sharps. Everybody keeps giving me crap about it. And my last drink was a half of an O'Doul's Amber at work. All right? I mean, I was sitting there. I'd gotten off work, and, you know, I was just, you know, they'd gotten used to feeding me. They were all trying to pump as much of this non-alcoholic stuff into work as they could to kind of – everybody liked Eric sober at work. It was a good thing, man. You know, profits are going up. So, well, that was my last drink, you know, and I don't know. It was the damnedest thing. It was just like I just couldn't do it anymore. I mean, I hadn't been praying. I'd been coming to the AA meetings. I hadn't been doing anything else. I didn't have a sponsor. I wasn't interested in doing anything extra, you know. But it wore me out. It wore me down. And I don't know if that's going to work for people that are new. I'm not suggesting that you go do that. I mean, it just is what happened for me. And so the drinking stopped. I don't know why. You know, I was coming to AA meetings, so that's a pretty good indicator of something happens here. Something happens here that's powerful enough to change something in me. Because, man, it was just getting ridiculous for a while there. I mean, it just was, you know, the pressure to get okay with drinking was powerful. The loneliness was powerful, you know. And when the drinking stops working is the worst thing in the world, because for the last couple of weeks, it's like I couldn't get drunk. I mean, I was trying. I'm not a quitter. I mean, I kept at it, you know. I'd go and I'd drink a 12-pack and I'd roll back to the store, I'd get another one. I was like, I can't believe I am walking. You know, this is amazing. So it just wasn't working. I don't know what was up in it. It wasn't working. I mean, I'm sure I would have blown some ridiculous number, but it wasn't fixing my mind anymore. It wasn't turning off the chatter. So I think that had a lot to do with it too, man. Got broken. But I know guys, man, where it's broken, and they keep chasing that carrot. And I don't know, man. I mean, I don't know what's up with that, you know. But I came here, you know, and after about a month of coming to the meetings is when the drinking stopped. A friend of mine who I knew in high school was in AA, and she helped me an awful lot. You know, she kept hounding me to get a sponsor, and then I got the sponsor, and then the sponsor kind of kept hounding me to get a home group. You know, and he started doing all kinds of stuff. I mean, he started giving me all kinds of direction. And he asked me if I'd follow his directions. One of the first things that he asked me. He asked me if I wanted to stay sober, which I thought was just the craziest thing to ask somebody in an AA meeting. But I've asked a lot of people that question if they want to stay sober. And you get some interesting answers if you ask that question. You just don't know, you know. But I think that he wanted to make sure that I was serious. That he was spending his time, you know, I don't know. I never really asked him. But from my own experience, I think that's probably why. And so he asked me if I'd follow his directions. And we started, you know, going through all this stuff together. And he was telling me all kinds of stuff. He'd tell me to sit up front, shake people's hands, get phone numbers, get a home group. Once I got the home group, you know, he was like, great, they gave you the key to the meeting. And I was all worried I'd get drunk and, you know, somehow screw it all up. He's just laughing at me, you know. He's laughing like you guys are, because you know, you get the key to me, and it's like, damn, you got to show up, and you're probably not going to get drunk, you know. However, we did have a coffee maker at that group, man. Somehow he'd get drunk, come back, make coffee. God bless him, man. I don't know, it was the damnest thing, but he kept coming. That coffee commitment was a powerful damn thing, you know. It'd drag you in here drunk or sober. So, seen it happen. We saw one girl. We had to trick her to getting sober. We just said, hey, listen, we don't have any cream. I don't know what we're going to do, you know. And we're like, could you possibly bring the cream every week? I mean, and she, damnest thing if I've ever seen, she started bringing that cream, and she stayed sober for a couple years, and then she married somebody and moved off. I don't know, but it was funny. She later figured it out. You know, we're all laughing about it. We're like, yeah, you know, she's like, the cream, man, okay. And, but it was a commitment. It was just a simple thing. It wasn't complicated. It wasn't any thinking about it. It was no hocus-pocus, you know. I don't even have any big words to use with you. Hocus pocus is, I'm stretching on that one. So anyway, but it was just simple, you know. And my sponsor was very good like that. My first sponsor, he was all about spirituality as action. When it gets spiritual, start moving your feet, you know. Everything, I'd be like, well, what's this? That's action, you know. Action's a magic word. Actually, all the time. Picking people up, you know. He had me picking up, you know, one of his sponsors one time and doing all this and whatever. And I just kind of hopped along and followed him around and just did whatever he did. You know, they call that getting in somebody's pocket, and he had me right there. And I was working in a lot of, I was working in the restaurant bar kind of deal back then for my first couple of years of sobriety, and I used to think that was so chic, you know. Oh, I'm working at a bar, I'm sober, you know, it's just one of those things. And you know, I was wondering kind of like what his whole, I remember when he told me about that, he was like, he never said anything about staying or going. He just said, when you get off work, I want you to leave work. Simple enough, you know. But that's just all because he knew, like, when I used to get off work, I wouldn't leave work. I'd be hanging around, you know, for many reasons. Now, number one, looking for some, you know, getting drunk and stuff. So, you know, and he got me praying every morning, you know, asking and thanking for the strength to stay sober on my knees and all this very simple stuff that I practice today. And he started just kind of helping me find the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous and the fellowship in here. And he also started taking me through the steps, you know, and he was taking me to AA funerals, and he was taking me to AA jail systems and AA psychiatric units. And over the I've eaten lunch in every hospital in Richmond, man, more than I like to admit, you know, and we were just bouncing all over the place. We'd go to the meeting at noon, we'd go out to lunch at 1, and then we'd go over to the treatment center at 2. And then I go to work at the bar at 4, you know, get off at 4 in the morning, come home, wake up. Well, you know, we know how it is when you first get sober, wake up at 6, 2 hours sleep, you know, wide-eyed, bushy-tail at 6 a.m., 2 hours sleep, you know, no problem, man. I mean, that was like that all the time. I was just going to those morning meetings. I just, you know, I'd sleep and I'd just be up, struck up, you know. I mean, I don't know what the hell was going on with that, but it's just this alcoholic energy, you know. You just, for me, it was just like I'm not comatose anymore. I was just popping up all the time, man. So, anyway, I was just running around going to all these meetings, you know, and doing all this stuff. And I finally, you know, I started going through the steps with this guy. I did the inventory and shared it with him. And we had, it was one of those inventories where it was just, I hate you. This is why I hate you. That's about as far as I got, you know. I just kind of blabbed all that stuff to him, and he didn't seem to be too much of a stickler about where I'd gone wrong with stuff, which I've always been a little regretful about. But I don't really remember much about that whole fifth step. And it was like 3 months sober, you know. I remember being a little bit nervous. I remember thinking that something bigger should have happened, you know, how our expectations are, is waiting for the sea to open up or something. But you know, I do remember him a few times sharing some things about what had gone on with him, and the biggest things that I was concerned about, he kind of helped steal my fears about some things that I was really worried about, you know, things that were just very unrealistic that I look back now. But, you know, you come in here, I know, and even today I can get some fear that is just real, you know, very real, and it, to the point where it just prevents me from functioning. So he got me straight on that stuff, and whatever happened in that was enough, you know, at that point. I went out with made amends to people, and I started trying to help other alcoholics, and I wasn't too much on cleaning up my mess as I went along the way. I wasn't so much seeking God in the 11th step. You know, I just was kind of, I don't know, I just was going to a lot of meetings. I wasn't drinking, trying to be helpful, but a day at a time, over a period of time, things got to be strange in AA for Eric. You know, I just started really just getting worn down mentally, and about 3 or 4 years sober, you know, it was like, I was about to ready to just, I didn't know what to do. I mean, I ended up in my kitchen, rocking back on my cooler, crying like a little baby. It is funny, Sam. It is. It's okay. You can laugh, baby. I appreciate that. It was pathetic. I mean, you know, and I look back now, but I was very serious, very dark time, you know. I was too sick for AA, you know. I'd been going to see this counselor because this girl, you know how that goes, or whatever. It was all her fault. And within a couple sessions, I talked to the counselor. It was the counselor and I against the girl, you know, and it wasn't working out too good for the girl. Yeah, that's how that always goes, because I can never, I mean, I don't know the truth. At that point, I had no knowledge of the truth about myself. You know, I walked up into there, and I'm sure I told this poor counselor what I thought was the truth, or maybe I didn't. I don't know, but, you know, it certainly wasn't another alcoholic who was well-equipped and armed with the facts about themselves, you know, who could, you know, show me exactly what I had been doing, you know. And so And I've been reading some outside literature. I was just scrambling. I was going to like 50,000 AA meetings a week, just not drinking my heart out and whining about all my problems to everybody and just wearing out the open discussion meetings and people, you know, trying to politically correctly tell me I should go to Al-Anon and all this crap, you know. And I was just like, oh, man, and I'm not bad about Al-Anon. It's just I was running my mouth, you know, and just airing it out. You know, really just trying to do whatever I could to feel better, you know. And I just had alcoholism without a drink. It was awful, you know. And I just felt like my problems were just too complicated for the steps and too complicated for AA. And I was kind of cornered again, you know. The good news is they weren't. Wasn't different. Thought I was. Found somebody in AA who kind of just snatched me right up, sat me down, and took me through the book here. And, everything has been completely different since that time. That's the short version, you know. But everything changed for the better, a day at a time, man. You know, it takes time. God, I just wasn't aware of all this time needing to pass for things to get better. I just missed all the parts in the book that talk about that. And things just do, man. It just takes time. And practice. And so my sponsor started, you know, at that point I switched sponsors and the new sponsor started pointing all this out. See that word commenced? That means begin. I'm like, ugh, you know, talk about, you know, and we've just begun. Did you see that underline just begun, you know? And, oh man, any kind of phrase to that, but that's appropriate, you know? I don't know how much long it takes to damage stuff. I mean, I drank for as long as I drank. You drank for as long as you drank, you know. None of us are here, you know, because it was wonderful. So things are pretty messed up. I got here because things are pretty messed up. It will take time to sort out. That's just as it should be. I look back now when I was my first couple years sober and where it was going on in my mind and matched up with what my behavior was like with people, you know, and I had set the stage and set the ball rolling with everything that was screwed up in my life in sobriety at that point. And I, you know, it's just how it was, you know. And I had somehow been giving myself credit for my sobriety, you know, up until that point. I've been kind of praying every day, but kind of slapping myself on the back when things are good and, you know, scolding the powers to be when things were not going my way. And so that was a very difficult way to live. It's impossible for somebody like me, I think, to live like that. And I just didn't understand the nature of alcoholism. You know, I'd come in with this idea, as we all do, I'm sure, about, you know, what alcoholism is. And I felt like, you know, hey, I drink a lot. I drink like a pig. That's what alcoholism is. And it certainly is, you know. But also, in a bigger scale, I've got this monstrous spiritual problem, just meaning that my behavior with the rest of society has been very poor for a long time, and that's putting it nicely, you know. And you know, there's just like there's laws and everything else. I mean, I cannot go around, you know, being disruptive everywhere without paying a price. I was talking to James, and I must have had a lot of big talks this weekend because I was talking to James about this too. So. But unless I'm a sociopath, you know, I just sober, I cannot. When I was drinking, I could do pretty much, it's like my conscience was just eroded away. I was doing things, or maybe it was me, but I just never really felt much of like it was ever a big deal. No matter what I did, something goes wrong, it was always your fault. That's just where I sat all the time. And sobriety, it's just like, man, it just wears me out when I'm going against the grain with people. You know, I can't sleep. My mind races, you know. I just get separated, and I feel it today, physically and mentally. And I think that what's happened is as a result of taking the direction out of the book, you know, some type of a conscience has come back into my life, which only means that I have an opportunity to react better or behave better or whatever the case may be, more so than I did before, you know. You know, I'm sure the guy I chased out of our store at 5 years sober down to Radio Shack and lit him up in that store would have appreciated that. You know, I mean, that's how I was behaving at 5 years sober. You know, I'm, you know, every once in a while just flying off the handle, you know, doing weird stuff, and it doesn't make you, give you any kind of saintliness. It just is kind of like a, in its awareness. And so anyway, my sponsor was very deliberate and specific about going through this book and making sure that I understood what I had. The allergy, the obsession, and the fact that I cannot of my own power or even your power fix that. And I got clear on that. That's a messed up place to be if I don't have any say in that, you know. And I guess that's pretty hard to accept, you know. But I was, at that point, I was emotionally banged up. I was ripe for acceptance, you know. You know how that gets, man. When you just get beaten on and then something just kind of shifts a little, you can kind of, you can move on into some kind of, that's just kind of how it's been for me. I got to get beaten down. Alcohol beat me down enough to get me in here, you know. The insanity beat me down enough. And at this point, not drinking got me real good, you know. And so I was pretty desperate, and I was, and it brought about some willingness. I was pretty upset with whatever God I thought was going, you know. What I really was upset with myself. I'd been playing God with everybody around me, you know. I'd been, you know, it's her fault, it's his fault, if only this, if only that, you know. And that's rough. So while I was upset, I was willing. It's all I needed. I made a decision. I took an inventory this time that was my inventory. It was not your inventory. First time that had happened, ever. You know? It's amazing how that works. And we got down to what I've been doing for the first time, and I saw things that I had never, I realized things. And I was writing some inventory today. I spent a good part of the day writing some inventory that I got to go over my sponsor. I'm like, God, that wish it could have been like that one, because it was just flowing right out of me. Now it's like I've been so sure most of the day that I've been right. I'm having a hard time. I'm like, but I'm getting there. So it's just taking some time. But man, it just kind of poured right out. And just like for the first time, I realized just all of the, you know, selfish, self-centered things I've been doing with people, you know. And it is what it is. But I came away from that with a better knowledge of what had been going on. You know, I realized that I had been setting the ball rolling with people, and finally, and it was no longer on them. I had been placing myself in these positions with people for a long time, you know. It just didn't even matter what they had done, you know. I put myself there, you know. It's kind of like you steal the candy bar, but you end up in jail. I mean, you know, it's not jail's fault. In fact, I stole the damn candy bar, you know. So, anyway, that was an eye-opening thing. And we had a whole list of these character defects. I mean, that was what it was. It wasn't for anything for me to sit around on and meditate on or pray about or practice or, I don't know, whatever people do with that stuff. I haven't had any success with managing that stuff so much. We'll talk a little bit about that too in a minute here. But I sat quietly for a while. You know, I did the prayer. I had a list of people. I made my amends with people. It was much different than my first experience of making amends. I had to set appointments with people. I had to go when it was good for them. I had to ask them what I could do to set things right. You know, it was a much different type of a deal. It was all amends with people in Alcoholics Anonymous. From that point, I had to start cleaning up my mess every day. My sponsor talked to me about reading a few pages out of the book each morning and getting quiet. And the way I sponsor people dramatically changed at that point. I started spending time with the guys I was sponsoring as opposed to just, you know, go read this, you know, go do this, go do that. You know, people spent time with me from the beginning since I got here. Lots of time listening to me, listening to my crap, you know. And so I owe, and I'm happy to pay, you know. And I mean, I don't even know if I like the word owe, but Dr. Bob used it. What the hell? I mean, you know. So, but it's not that kind of owe, like you got to pay the debt. But it is. I mean, you know, I don't know what it is, but when somebody needs something, it isn't so much of a, it isn't a struggle. I mean, I don't know why that something like that's changed for me. And I'm glad. You know, once in a while, it is a struggle because I'm just, you know, it is what it is. But, I mean, I'm happy to go do that, you know, and be of service. Where before, I don't know, I had a lot of different thoughts about that, you know. I didn't want to be an alcoholic. And when I got here, I didn't want to be bothered with anything, really, you know. And all that stuff started to change as a result of taking the steps, man. Something kind of started moving in the right direction. So from that point until now, all kinds of stuff has happened. I was about 5 years sober, 4 years sober, when I finally took the steps of AA with honesty and with somebody who had, you know, had the experience himself. That's about right. I mean, I was coming off the rails at that point. You know, I was having just a tough bit of emotional sobriety, is what I've heard people refer to it as. And so a little bit every day from then until now, all kinds of stuff started to change. I was 5 years sober, no job, borrowing money from the government again, try to go back to school, which, you know, that's not such a bad thing, going back to school. But for a guy who already owes money and is not paying it back, and needs to pay, you know, it was a conflict of interest. Let's put it that way. You know, you owe, you pay. So, and, you know, my sponsor was very big on me having a job. You know, it's just like, you got to get a job. You know, I'm a working kind of guy. I love work. I always have. I was way off track, man. I finally got back on track. A job, you know, I was no longer working in the restaurant business. I got a job, same job I'm in now. I was working at that job for a long time. And, it's been unbelievable. It's the type of job that I did not ever see myself having. A friend of mine, a girl I used to work with in the bar, she came and tried to get some help to get sober. I helped plug her into some other people I knew, and she started getting sober, and she got this job. And she was like, "You'd love this job. Come on, you should go work here." I was like, "No, no, no. I'm going to go find another job over here." You know, I was whatever. So I went over here and did it Eric's way for a while, and that kind of bombed out. She's like, "I still got this job over here, you know." And lo and behold, perfect job, you know. So as a result of a friend of mine, you know, in AA, I'm sitting where I am now. And it's been great. I got all kinds of freedom, you know. I take time off to do whatever I want, whenever I want. With freedom comes a lot of responsibility, you know. So I have to kind of try to manage that. But what I found, I'll tell you, that works is when, as long as I make my commitments in AA, everything seems to go well with this job, period. That's just that simple. There hadn't really been any thought process about managing nothing. When I get an AA call, I take it. When I get a work call, I take it. Let it work itself out, you know? I don't have to show up. I don't have a time clock and all that kind of, I mean, I have responsibility because I've got creditors. So my creditors are my boss, really. You know, that's how that has to go. But I'm able to take phone calls, you know, as long as I'm not with a client or something like that. And I'm able to go do whatever it is, and it's been great. You know, for my kind of personality or whatever, it seems to have been working well. And I work with a couple. My bosses are the most two normalest, drinkingest guys you've ever seen. And they have a very normal person kind of reaction to life. I could sit there and watch these two knuckleheads all day and how they react to people. They're just so calm, you know. They don't ever rear up about anything. Once in a while, I'll see them come out, you know, but man, is it a rarity? I'll call them up and I'm like, "You're not going to believe what blah, 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 blah. This is what I want to do. What do you think, Rick?" You know, and he'll be like, "Well," and he'll just say something like nice. I don't know. He always has some kind of a nice response, you know, or he's a big fan of waiting or no response at all. A lot of people in AA are big fans of that too, you know, the pause. And so I've got great bosses I work for. They set a great example, you know, for me. They've set a great example in forgiveness, you know. I sent an email to the president of a global corporation one day because I wasn't getting what I wanted, you know. That was probably right after that Radio Shack incident, and I was on a bad streak that week. So that guy replied to me, and I just was walking around like the biggest peacock in the barn, you know. I thought, "Oh, look at Eric," you know. Went to the top man, getting what I want now, you know, but my bosses described that day as, you know, the firestorm, you know, it began. And it did, man. It started trickling down. I didn't know anything about this chain of command thing, this corporate. I'm just a little guy. I didn't know how this works. I thought you're supposed to go run after what you want, right? That's what I've always done all my life. Give it to me, you know. So all kinds of crap happened. People almost lost their jobs. You know, my bosses just got railed and all this stuff happened. And you know, I was sure I would lose my job. You know, and one of my bosses didn't talk to me for a couple of weeks. You know, he just was so pissed. But they came together, sat me down. You know, they had a very calm talk with me, you know, and told me why they were disappointed and explained to me how things are supposed to happen, you know. and told me, you know, I don't remember all that stuff. I was just in shock. They told me that I got the deal that I wanted, which is probably not the best thing to tell somebody like me, that my behavior paid off, but somehow it miraculously worked out. But the point of the story is that they showed me a great example of forgiveness. I remember thinking, man, my God, all the people that piss me off for silly stuff all the time, I just hold the biggest grudges. I mean, looking at my inventory I wrote this afternoon, all the people I'm upset at, you know, some of them have made the inventory for, you know, it's their annual appearance on the inventory. You know, it's like, God, really? You're back again, you know? And so I'm just like, Christ, come on. So I just, it amazes me, you know, they have this ability, you know, and it's just, it's, that's a good example, but that's been good. Our relationships with my family have changed an awful lot. This last year has been, this last few months, my mom has been rather ill in Williamsburg, and my uncle and my cousin have all been helping out. We've all been spending lots of time together, you know, and where I've spent many years feeling like I was separated from those relationships, whether I was less than or greater than or whatever, it's like we're all on a level playing field, you know. It's like you act like a man, they treat you like a man. It's just that simple. You act like a little child that shows up drunk, you get treated like one, you know. So you start showing up sober, that's what started happening, and, you know, you pay your bills and they see you, you know, showing up every year sober at Christmas. They start to get used to that. They kind of bank on that, and those relationships changed as a result of what you all have shown me how to do. Not because, you know, I'm some whatever. That's unbelievable. My uncle has always been this guy that I thought that was just, you know, up way up here. And he is. He's way up here in a good way now. He's more like a idol. I don't even think it was idolizing. I could never seem to charm him, you know, with my self-seeking and all this crap. So it's not necessary. I know he loves me, you know. I can have a normal man-to-man conversation about him, you know. I can cuss in front of him. He cusses in front of me, you know. And not that that's, but it just is more of a respect thing, I guess. I don't know. It's something. I was just afraid of him, I think. I was probably just afraid of what he thought of me. Who knows? But anyway, these things have changed, you know. My relationship with my brother was a real roller coaster for a few years in sobriety. It's leveled off nicely, I will say, since I started getting better. Not because he's crazy, because he's a great guy, but I just stopped trying to sponsor him. So that worked. You know, stopped trying to sponsor my mom. She doesn't need a sponsor. Well, she needs a sponsor, but it doesn't need to be me. Let's put it that way. So she's a wonderful woman, you know, and she's been miserable for the last month. Hopefully she's on the upswing, but we've been able to, because of my great job, I go down, sit in the hospital every day. I work in the lobby if I need to. You know, I can take as much time as I need to. So that's unbelievable. So all these things are happening. You know, my job life has gotten sober. My family life has gotten sober. My credit got sober. You know, my brain got sober as far as the spin cycle that was always on all the time. It was like white noise all the time, grinding. I was 3 months sober. And it's like one day I just found myself, it was just like it popped, and I was at Steve's Diner in Richmond, and I was a part of the conversation. It's like you just dropped me in there, you know. It's like I just came in off the moon or something. I remember that day because it was just like, I was like, what'd you just say? You know? I was like, and there they, it was like, because the whole time, I was always sitting at lunch looking at somebody, you know, looking right in the eye, they're talking, and I am just thinking about 20 other things. I could not hear. My sponsor always kept saying, you need to get your ears checked. And I thought he was just being a smartass. You know, I'm like, well, my ears are fine, you know. But he would say something and I just wouldn't register, you know. Yeah, it took me years to figure that out. I was like, oh, God, that's what it was, yeah. So, you know, that stuff has quieted down. All kinds of things have quieted down. My first sponsor would always tell me things like, Eric, 97% of the things you worry about will never happen, you know. But I was always running to him with the 3% situation, you know, convinced, you know, this is it, man. This is what's going to happen, you know. And he was really right about that. You know, there's a couple things that, you know, are kind of happening. You get somebody who's so willful, some of this crap is going to happen. But he was right, you know. He always had these great one-liners like that. You know, he'd tell me the people that can't admit that they're wrong are the ones that stay sick. You know, he'd always tell me that, and he was making me apologize to people all the time and stuff. And I was just like, oh, this is wearing me out. He just didn't want me to get stuck being right and being drunk, you know. He helped me an awful lot. All kinds of people in AA meetings have helped me, you know, and continue to. It's been something else. I don't know what this, whatever power is here that's helping you, it's helping me. I have no idea. I don't know anything about God. I'm not a church-going guy. I don't even know how necessary it is for me to, you know, when I was new, I was on the analytical, philosophical warpath at about a year sober. I had all those prayers figured out for everybody, you know. And I feel like I need to apologize to a lot of people. If you were there, sorry. Little did I know that all I need to do is just kind of show up and, you know, make sure I do what I say I'm going to do when I say I'm going to do it, you know. And I do need to pray, and I do. And I was talking to my sponsor a couple nights ago, just in regards to the stuff with my mom. Like, what happens, you know, what am I supposed to do, Victor? You know, what if she dies? You know, what the hell there? What if she lives? What's the deal? What do you do there? And, you know, I said, I don't feel comfortable praying to keep my mom. Please keep my mom alive, or please, you know, whatever. I don't know, you know. And he is just like, well, what you do is you just pray for strength. You know, that's it. You just pray for strength for people around you, for the hospital people, the whatever. You know, he's like, well, if she lives, that's God. What are you going to do? You're going to say it's God's will if she dies? You're going to say that if she lives, it's God's. You know, we don't know. We have no idea. It's not really, that kind of helped me, you know, because, you know, I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, we're all going to pass at some point, but this is just kind of a confusing thing where I'm supposed to put, I know I'm supposed to be praying, but I don't really know what the heck to do. So, not that you can really screw it up, but what happens with me is when I start saying some goofy kind of self-centered prayers, I start to bargain again, you know, and I get myself into trouble, and it's not too good of a spot. So I could just talk about this stuff with whoever and get a better perspective. But with this power that's been keeping me sober, you know, again, talking to Wise James over here this weekend, and I don't say that sarcastically, we had a very good talk about, you know, well, is it me running my life? Is it God running my life? I know I keep hearing all this stuff in AA meetings, you know, well, you know, God's just running my life, you know, and this and that. And I'm not trying to talk trash about other AA meetings, but it's always been really confusing. It never really sits well with me. What do you mean God's really running my life, you know? So how does that work? You know, I was always getting frustrated hearing these people say, well, God's running my life, and, you know, and playing it off like it's just great or whatever, you know, or not, or something, or I'm running my life again and this. And we talked about it quite a bit, and looking back on my experience, I think what's happened for me with that whole deal is when I seek for direction, I guess that's my opportunity to find some direction, you know, or some kind of intuition, you know. I have this free will. I don't think it's a bad thing. I use a free will all the time. I use it at work. I'm a driven, willful guy. I think applied properly, I think it's probably been a great gift, and it's helped me in a lot of areas of my life, you know. But looking up the word self-will today, or whatever it was, that where my will power is being used when I'm in conflict with somebody, you know, it's like, that's where the problem has been most of the time. So I don't know or sit so much well with, you know, I'm just kind of a puppet or anything. I think I have an opportunity as an alcoholic who doesn't have another solution for living or for staying sober. I've been given a pretty good opportunity to seek something that can not only keep me sober, but it can help me not piss you all off too bad, too, on a day-to-day basis, you know. That's really what it comes down to, is just my relationships with people. It isn't anything real complex. I mean, that's been my whole struggle all along, has been getting along with people, being respectful where I need to, or being helpful where I need to. So that's been just a day-by-day practice of seeking direction when I'm in conflict. And at that point, I think something does happen. You know, if I want the answer enough, it comes. I was reading that today. That's true. It's been my experience. So thank you for having me.